check, we are recording right now.
A waddy blood clot. Yep. Hello.
Yeah, get out of your system at the start. Guys, you're listening to the Dead Ramones podcast. You already knew that because that's what it says on the goddamn podcast app. My guest today is the wonderful Kevin Ginn. Hello.
Hey.
How you going?
I'm all right.
We got some nice sodas, some nice hipster sodas from the bottle shop.
Yeah, you've given me a lime, yuzu, and chili flavored one. So it's just like, I mean, I don't know. They just sound like drinkable vapes.
Yeah,
like
I've got a cinnamon, cardamom, ginger, fig.
Yeah, I'm just gonna get that.
There we go. The brand is So Soda. If you guys want to sponsor the podcast,
yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Mine's really good.
Should we do a little?
Oh yeah. Go for
little,
it. Yeah,
little exchange.
I'd love to.
That's also lovely.
Yeah, they're both really good.
All
right, ad over. Kevin,
yes.
You are a stand-up comedian.
Unfortunately, yes.
A Chinese man.
Yes.
And a writer. You're a TV writer, I saw.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Thank you very much. It's ABC Fresh Blood.
Is it one of their web series?
It's a web series, so I'm hesitant to say TV because I don't really know what that means anymore. Because you know how millennials are like reverse boomers? It's just like, we don't know how TV works anymore.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we don't know how fax machines work.
My dog's going crazy.
Yeah, that's all right.
You all right, buddy? Oh, there's someone outside. It's okay.
Okay. Is your dog racist?
He's crying. Yeah, maybe. He doesn't like... But the show you wrote, it's a show. It is a show. It's not... I would not... I've seen the trailer. I wouldn't call it content. I would call it a show.
Thank you. No, that's very kind because we approach it. So it's like, it's an anthology series. It's like three parts because it's like the phase one of A Fresh Blood. If you're not familiar with the industry,
let's talk industry, Kev.
Low level Australian comedy making. ABC and Screen Australia is just like this grant program where they give several teams like a grant essentially to make 3 by 5 minute episodes, real web series type of thing.
Yeah,
just
cool.
It's kind of like seeding new content.
Yours looks very so. Yours is called Westerners.
Yes,
I haven't watched the series yet. I watched the trailer. I'm assuming it's about like Western Sydney. Is that right?
It is and it isn't. It's a very multi-layered name because it's about like yeah, like,
oh, I understand.
Yeah. So young ethnic people in Australia,
but all to, yeah, the West.
But there is a bit of an interplay between like Western Sydney versus inner West Sydney, but also like we try to write it in a way that's accessible for everyone. So it's like how Kim's Convenience is watchable by anyone not from Canada.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Yeah. But it's also like, I guess, like when you're talking from like the idea of immigrants, I guess Westerners also relates to Western civilization or Western,
yes, absolutely,
white Western countries as well.
Yeah, because the whole conversation
coming into that culture and stuff.
Because the whole thing as well is that like in the conception of it was a core team. We were also talking about like when we go to like our parents' country of origin.
Yeah,
then we are viewed as like, oh, you know, you're the Australian, etc.
Yeah.
This discourse has also as well been like done to death. Like it's very 5 years. It's very Representation Matters 2017.
Yeah, but not for the listeners of Dead Ramones.
No. I honestly have no idea. Like the Venn diagram overlap between people who would listen to this podcast and people who would also watch Westerners, I think, is literally one guy, and he's also me.
No, but I think people should go watch it. It looks cool.
No, I
want to watch it. I just haven't gone around to it. I want to watch yours. I want to watch Lauren Bonner, great, funny comedian. She also has...
Oh, I loved her series. I loved her series so much.
Going like, Under, that's the other one. They're all on YouTube, right?
They're all on YouTube. Yeah. So yeah, just absolutely go check them out. Support like...
They look very... So like, I think for most of my life, when I've said, oh, it looks like, if it's like TV show, whatever, it looks Australian, that is a pejorative.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But these ones look Australian in the best way possible. Like, I feel like finally, like creators have reached the generation kind of conveyor belt has finally reached people who kind of have a better grasp of what Australian culture really is.
Oh, absolutely. Finally. Yeah. It's like,
after nearly, like, 250 years of being a country, like we're finally like...
Yeah, it's also just like we very much are, because it's in the names, like Fresh Blood, we're trying to like get new shit made, you know, like we are a small country relatively, and you know, this kind of media discourse has also been like done to death a whole bunch, but like, it's like, do you remember like a couple years ago when Islanders started rapping in Australia, and then everyone was like, "Oh no, this is good now." Is like Australian
the
rappers,
drill, the drill rap,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
the
like all
documentary,
yeah, yeah, like yeah. all like the Pacific Islander guys, yeah, from right. far West Sydney, they started rapping, and everyone's like, "Oh no, this actually is awesome," this,
and it's not Oz hip hop,
yeah,
not
and it's also yeah. like we could export it. Like imagine, yeah, fucking, sure. imagine showing Cursor to an American, right? Yeah, no disrespect yeah. to Cursor, he is the fucking sickest.
We know he's listening,
but also as well, it's just like, but do you know what I mean? Like,
I do know what you mean. Yeah,
it's also
yeah,
just because
yeah.
like the internetification of like,
but it's the same with comedy, like comedy. For so long in Australia, like I would show friends in America, like people who are in the local scene who I think are really funny, and they'd be like, I don't know, I just like jokes, man. Like yeah. they don't and I think there is a cringe factor to a lot of Australian mm. comedy, as there is with Australian hip hop, even Oz rock.
Yeah.
Trying to take it into like an, I guess it's the American market, because that's the biggest market in the world.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And well, like, the biggest market is actually China, but yeah.
hey, I'm all for it.
Yeah,
but the thing I'm trying to this. Hey, G, if you're listening, whatever you, I'll cover whatever bands you want, buddy.
But it's also like, it's like, even when I've met comedians from smaller Australian cities, mm-hmm. or like I watch comedy from like New Zealand and stuff, like just places mm-hmm. with smaller populations, I sometimes get the feeling of, oh, like what they're doing is what we were doing like X amount of years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's just because just like, you know, like quantity is a quality unto itself. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
like when you just have that many people or that few people doing things, just the sheer possibility frontier of things getting done is like way smaller. Yeah. So this is a real fucking wanky way to start the hardcore podcast.
It's interesting. I like to give people an idea of who you are. Like, what's the point of doing the podcast if you're not true. Able to put yourself out there?
Yeah,
sorry, I don't think it sounds wanky. I'll ask the question.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
So that's cool. Yeah, watch Westerners on YouTube, I guess.
Like, yeah, that'd be great.
Oh, and you have a stand-up comedy show coming to... I know you're going to Melbourne.
Yes, I'll be taking my show, Comedy Dwarf, to Melbourne and Sydney comedy festivals.
I've been doing your art for you, and I'm like, oh yes, Comedy Duo.
Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah, that was on purpose, because Dwarf is my Chinese first name.
Yeah, cool.
So it's like a little like, oh, you thought this show was called Comedy Duo.
Oh, that's our opener. Great. But are you stupid white people?
And then I put the mic in the stand and I leave.
and then it's sold out every single night because it's Melbourne.
Yeah.
Yeah, call us stupid daddy. It's like 40 white people in a room just wanting to be demoralized by an ethnic man.
God fucking hell.
You're going to do so well.
Oh man, but yeah, no, like it's also another multi-layer of, cuz like the show has kind of got a bit of a philosophical bent to it. So like, yeah, cool. the show will talk a lot. I don't know if the show is about Buddhism, but I'd use devices and themes of Buddhism a lot in that hour show.
And your artwork is you dressed as Waymond from Everything, fucking
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Everything Chinese All the Time.
You mean the future?
Xi Jinping's propaganda machine.
Yeah.
Everything Everywhere All at Once. No, I love that movie. I generally love that movie.
The clothes that I wear in that was like a specific choice to like just look like a young uncle. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the show is also about, like, you know, like, I'm a dude in his late 20s. I'm in the last year of my 20s.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, the lore that you have to...
must be nice. I'm always in the last year of my 30s, dude.
Yeah. This is, again, further proof that you are Chinese, right? Because I've said it before. I'll say it for the people on the pod. Your last name is Sim. You got thin eyes.
Sim is Gaelic.
And you look so young. Like, your skin looks amazing.
What's the Eastern version of Black Don't Crack?
Asian Don't Raisin.
Asian Don't Raisin. I like that. That's good.
Yeah,
Asian Don't Raisin.
Asian Don't Raisin.
Nice.
Yeah.
For those listening... this is a funny story because, I think we were just at a gig and you're like, I swear to God, there's some Chinese in you somewhere. There's some Chinese in you.
I was not hitting on you. You're making it sound like I was hitting you.
Would you like there to be?
Oi, you want some Chinese in you?
No, you were like, yeah, I bet you there is. And then like, I think it was like the next day or something. Like couldn't have been the next day because I went back home to Brisbane to see my parents. And we were just talking... It must have been because you said that it was on my mind.
Yeah.
But it felt like it came up pretty organically. Dad's like, oh, yeah, my mom. Like, so my grandma.
Yeah.
She always used to talk about, and this is a quote of a quote, by the way. This is a character in a story told by another person.
Mm-hmm.
Disclaimer. Yeah, she used to say, oh, there's a little Chinaman somewhere back in the family tree. So all that means is the Sims came over here. They had to like fucking change the spelling of their name because the Irish were also subjugated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, they were.
So I had to go from S-Y-M to S-I-M. Mm. And then one of these Irish Sims somewhere back, back in the day.
No, that's what
they fucked a Chinese railroad worker one time.
Yeah, railroad worker.
Yeah.
I reckon that's a lie that your mum told you. And it's actually, they changed it to, it was changed from Siam, S-I-A-M. Ah! But now your family name would just be called Bangkok. Your name is Ryan Bangkok.
God damn it.
But yeah, no, look, dude, I knew you were Chinese before you did. And all I can say is, welcome home,
you're
brother.
You're really forcing this connection.
Happy New Year, dude. Happy New Year. I've got an envelope with $50 in it for you.
Actually, maybe I should lean into this. I love $50. $50 is one of my favorite things. I don't know, my love of being white versus my love of $50. I gotta see what I prefer.
Yeah, it's a decision that every Sim has to make in their life.
Yeah. Excuse me. So this won't come out for a few weeks, but we are recording this almost on the last day of Lunar New Year. You got 2 more days of Lunar New Year, right?
No, we've got like, wait.
I thought it was 10th of Feb.
No, Chinese New Year starts like it lasts for 2 weeks, dude.
That and also 10th of Feb was last week. I'm losing my mind, Kevin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. It's
so
like,
when does it finish?
So
when is it over? When is this bullshit over?
Chinese New Year, I think this year started on the 10th of February and it lasts for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Always very blasé about it because the whole thing is just like you get a whole 2 weeks. Like it's like everyone in my family has
Chinese
like
Hanukkah.
Yeah, we have like a 2 week period with which you like arrange some time to hang out and get hot pot and just, you know, just get dinner and stuff. Yeah. Hot pot is what we call smoking weed. No.
I love it. All right, well today you've come here to my house. I'm so worried about this dog. He's destroying something in another room, but I guess we'll just have to ignore it.
Yeah.
So each episode focuses on a year and one record from that year to kind of like sum up the world of hardcore, like progressing year by year, basically.
Yep.
We're up to 1996. We're talking about the band Integrity and their third full-length record, Humanity is the Devil.
Yep.
That's what we're doing. Yep.
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing.
You're like, correct.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, third full length. Their first album came out in 1991. It was called Those Who Fear Tomorrow. Then there was a 4-year gap between records.
Mm-hmm.
Their second record came out in 1995 called Systems Overload. And this one followed very quickly after.
Yeah. Yes.
Were you already familiar? Yes.
I'm the autistic one. Hey guys, here's very detailed information.
Welcome
with lots
to
of
my
numbers.
Special interest podcast, Kevin. Were you already familiar with it? Because you're from the punk scene.
Well, okay, so I was born in 1994. So when this album came out, I would have been 5, I think.
Well, I didn't come to it when I was 11 years old either. I found it in my adult years.
Yeah. Well, so like when I grew up in the punk scene in Sydney, in like kind of like the DIY space,
mm-hmm.
like from
what
around
bands?
The edge
what
of...
What bands were you around?
Well, like I was around, I'd say actually a more useful information point is I was around Blackwire Records a lot.
I love Blackwire Records. That was my absolute favorite place to play.
Yeah. And
absolute favorite venue.
Yeah, so I was the door boy there for like hundreds of gigs. Like, because like I fell into the punk scene via like hanging out with some anarchists when I was like a lost teenager, right? When I was 14 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. And so I would go to just lots of gigs. I'd go to all ages gigs. Like I wouldn't be able to, like every now and then, like I snuck into like Limp Wrist at the Annandale.
Nice.
You know, I snuck into Mastodon at the Annandale,
I think. Limp Wrist. They toured Australia a million times and I never saw them.
Oh,
I'm an idiot.
You're a homophobe.
I definitely called someone in the audience at the comedy show last night a homophobe.
Yeah.
Indirectly. But I got a bit how I like enjoy it when gay dudes flirt with me.
Yeah.
And I'm
suck you off?
And suck me off. I'm straight. But I was like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, I was just like, are you here with your girlfriend? You're obviously a straight man. Not obviously, but like he was. And I'm like, does this resonate? Do you know what I'm saying? And he's like, no. When usually dudes go, yeah, I know exactly what I mean. But yeah, this guy was like, no. I'm like, oh. Yeah. In Newtown, of all places, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I did not actually call him a homophobe.
No, that is it's pretty that does read weird to me, as it's like you don't have gay friends who tell you how handsome you are. That's why I keep gays around me. I'm like a straight woman. I just want compliments.
Yeah, yeah.
I want compliments and
gossip. You're sneaking out on you after your wife goes to sleep to go to gay bars, but just to get a self-esteem boost.
No, I'm just hanging out with John Glover, local Sydney comedian homosexual.
I swear they're not sucking me off. They're just giving me compliments.
Yeah. But yeah, no, like so what? How
sorry, we're talking about Limbris. Sorry.
Yeah. So I was in. I
got rat brain today, man. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I was the door boy at Blackwire Records like a lot, because they were one of the few consistent, if not the only consistent, underage, like all ages venues for punk music.
That dude's new shop's quite good as well.
Yeah. Shout out Tom Scott.
Tom Scott, 19th Nervous Breakdown. Go buy a record.
Yeah, he's a lovely, lovely, sweet guy. He's really an absolute, nice guy. Absolute human teddy bear.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, he was around. He was one of the, you know, it's like, you know, it's a whole, like, it takes a village to raise a child thing. Like, I was like 14, 15. And like people got to see my adolescence. Like, all my friends were like adults and like, you know, a couple years older than me. And so that was like a really cool privilege and honor to be able to grow up around such like a loving, supportive scene.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was really nice.
The DIY scene in Sydney was good. I remember there were a few bands. I think, were Majorca from here?
That name is firing some neurons, but I can't remember. Yeah.
There are a few DIY bands from Sydney that we played
I've seen every...
Do you remember Between the Devil and the Deep?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
I basically, the thing is, as well, is like what I would do is I'd do like the door and like do the stamps. And also because like when I was like a little boy, I had social anxiety. And then doing the door at Blackwire made me like... it made me like people trained. Like I was able to socialize quite well.
That's a
well.
Good framework though, because it's like you have one job to do. You do have to greet people. So it's kind of like...
Yeah.
You're in a role though, so it's not as scary as just having to socialize.
Yeah. And also as well, like I would do the door for them like heaps of weekend, like Friday show, Saturday show, Sunday show, all in a row. Mm-hmm. And also this is all like volunteer, because it was all like a really, really lovely DIY space. People just gave so much love and so much time and energy to the community. It was really lovely. And so I'd do like a door spot. I'd do the door for a Friday show, Saturday show, Sunday show, and like all the shows would have like 50 people at each of them, and there'll be no crossover. Like there'll be no crossover between any of the shows. So I got to just meet so many different like different circles of people and type of stuff. So there were, you know, like the grindcore guys, but then there was also like the Doll Wave when Doll Wave was a thing.
Yeah. I never really got into those bands, but I kind of remember the sound.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like does Gooch Palms.
What was the other? Dick Diver? Was that one?
A Dick Diver,
Day
I think.
Ravies?
Day Ravies. And there was like a lot of two pieces. There was a whole thing as well where like two pieces with drummers that didn't have a bass. They'd only have like a floor tom and a snare and maybe one cymbal. Like real minimalist setups that often sounded like shit.
There's an ingenuity to that style of music, and like obviously like with most art, most of it is bad, but then I think there is really something to playing or trying to be creative within pretty strict limitations.
Constraints breed creativity.
It's like
an anime character putting limits on themselves so they become even stronger.
Yes, it is like that, Kevin. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. You know?
Do you remember, I played a venue like in one of my early, I was in a metalcore band called Marathon, but more like, it was like more of a DIY expression of that metal sound. We played a factory space, and I've totally forgotten.
Was it Dirty Sherlows? Or Maggotville?
Might have been Maggotville.
Maggotville was before my time.
Was there all like graffiti on the wall? Oh, you wouldn't know.
That's every warehouse show, isn't it? Yeah.
Damn. Do you remember Ohana from?
Yep, I remember
from
Ohana.
Gong, right?
Yeah. I think they were from Ohana, and then some of them, I think. Like one of the
they're a great band.
Yeah, I love that. Sorry, band. This is just old heads.
I don't care.
This is just old heads. Just
Quebec,
reminiscing.
Quebec, Sydney, or Melbourne? I can't remember. Quebec.
I don't remember Quebec.
Screamo band. Yeah,
I don't remember. Because also, like the thing is, I was like, I would listen to like my friends' bands, mm-hmm. and I'd watch bands live. Mm-hmm. But also, just because I was like, you know, like 15 years old, a lot of the time people would be like, "Oh, do you like Gorilla Biscuits or like mm-hmm. Earth Crisis?" And I'd be like, "I haven't listened to that because I'm a child.
But those bands weren't as crusty as like the scene that maybe Gorilla Biscuits, just because of the legacy. Like I think maybe like some of those DIY crust punk dudes would be Gorilla Biscuits. But Earth Crisis seemed to set, even though it's the cultural delineations between these bands and what's appropriate for which
and also
subculture you're a part of is very fluid.
It's also like fundamentally, I think what it is, because like I went to a hardcore like fest like a couple weeks ago at the
Speed played?
Not Speed, but like Extortion played.
Oh, right. Yep.
Extortion. Okay, I guess Extortion headline. Because also what happened was I was around the scene for years, very deep in it. And then I graduated high school and became a full-time uni student.
Yeah.
And I also starting to do comedy.
Full-time Chinese guy.
Full-time Chinese guy. Full-time UNSW Asian.
Like, I'm going to be a doctor or a lawyer. I don't know. I'm at uni. I'm going to be one of these things. There's no other option.
Essentially, yeah. And so then what happened was I just kind of stopped going to shows for a while. So for me now, as a 29-year-old man, when I go to like a hardcore show, I'm really nostalgic. I see people I haven't seen in 7 years. And I'm just like, wow, like I'm 29, but I was a geriatric punk when I was like 23 or something.
I knew I'm that exact feeling. Danny Chalmers, who used to work for Resist Records, she came on this pod. Exact same thing. Yeah. Like you go away.
Like was like the underage kid as well? Or?
She told me she started at Resist pretty young. So she was in the hardcore scene like pretty young, but like also not only in it, but kind of like working in what's essentially the spearhead of Australian hardcore.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe
not
anymore, because like they just have so many sort of bigger...
Yeah.
I hesitant to say mainstream, but like they made their money off Parkway Drive.
Yeah, and also that's the thing, like going back to what we were saying earlier about like Australian cultural cringe, like actually like one thing that is... that in my mind I view as like quite successfully exported is like heavy guitar music from Australia.
Yeah, people love
it. Like I went to high school with Justice for the Damned.
Yeah.
Which, and but also
Dyarta's Murder, Parkway Drive, Justice for the Damned, fucking
Hard-ons as well.
Like, the Hard-ons, like, people love the Hard-ons. Yeah.
And so, and also as well, when I was in the scene as well, like I just knew that like, oh, like it's like that whole like, you know.
I felt the Prong Queen were big overseas for a while.
Okay, yeah.
Carpathian.
Carpathian
had a release on Death
Machine. Well, I mean, like there was also, oh, you know, a band I see all the time is the band called Michael Crafter.
Oh yeah, the grindcore band.
Yeah,
I love that. And they played... Michael Crafter was the singer in I Killed the Prong Queen. He was an extremely online guy. And then these like little edgelords, were they were Sydney?
Well, there were two guys. Yeah, two Sydney guys.
Yeah,
two
they
Sydney
started
guys.
A grindcore band.
They started a grindcore band called Michael Crafter to make fun of Michael Crafter. Yeah. And they went for so many years. And I remember one of my mates told me.
They were quite good though, I heard.
They were good grind. And also as well, it's just like, it was just like, as long as the real Michael Crafter, the guy, is around and annoyed by this, this will continue.
Yeah.
Which I think is very
Michael Crafter went on Big Brother and everything.
Oh,
yeah,
God. Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy. Just like, it's just so funny, like, as well, like, because like my wife's from a small country town, and this is the thing I've noticed now, like anthropologically, it's like when white people start to mutate from each other, they just start becoming goths and like e-girls and like you know, start wearing like dark colors and shit like that, and it's just like, oh, we have that industry. Like even my wife, she studied the recorder at the conservatorium, but when she was a teenager, shut the fuck up, it's a real instrument.
That is amazing.
Yeah, she's been playing recorder for over 20 years.
Wow, she really ran with that in grade 3.
It's a beautiful, beautiful instrument. I saw her 4th-year recital. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life.
Shout out, Ingrid.
Yeah, shout out my beautiful wife. But like even she, when she was in high school, like would go watch Parkway Drive and stuff. It was because it's the thing for like young people with energy to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And as well, it's just like, you know, there's that whole discourse as well. Like punk isn't inherently political in any way. It's more just what it is. It's just an aesthetic of energy and like adrenaline and like strong feelings. That's why you can have bands like fucking Screwdriver being little Nazis who superficially look like you know, straight edge vegans.
I think it's not necessarily
autism.
Extremity.
It's all autism.
It is all autism. But it's not extremity necessarily in ideals, like it can be with Screwdriver, but it is extremity in emotion.
Yeah. And also as well, like there was this whole thing of like when I was around, people would make fun of cosplay punks. And it was like, oh, these people aren't real punks and that type of stuff. And it's just like, it's just really interesting, you know, the delineation of, you know, subculture, like a scene versus a community. What is a circle of friends and what is you know what I mean? Yeah, like it's just, you know, it's just pretty crazy. It's pretty interesting,
Well, yeah, that's always relevant. I think this band, maybe even to a greater extent than certain other ones, because like Integrity did, I think maybe with this record as well, like everyone sort of talks about Systems Overload as like a turning point for the band and a turning point for hardcore. And I understand that. But then like once they found out that they were able to do it, I just feel like this is a more realized vision than what Systems Overload, which is the album that came before it. And I guess, this gave way to, we can get into this later, but like the Holy Terror sound, which is like an extension of Cleveland Hardcore, which is where Integrity started. The Holy Terror Process Church, which is, there's no centralized information about Holy Terror. Like, is it a church? Is it just a subculture, a subgenre? Is it a fucking record label? There's no real explanation.
So I'm so confused as to what the context of this, because basically you said, listen to this album, I listened to it, and I was like, this fucking rips. And then
it does rip.
And I listened to it a couple more times. What's Holy Terror? What is
Holy
this?
Terror was, oh man. Let's come back to it.
Is it a record label?
It's a sound, it's kind of a record label, it's kind of a cultural philosophy that DWID more or less started, but I've got a bit more information from it. It's very confusing. Okay. It's based off the Process Church. The Process Church is based off, weirdly, the Church of Satan and Scientology. And
it's autism. It all comes back to autism.
That's a great catch-all. Process Church was a religious movement back in the 60s, and they were partly blamed for the Manson murders as well.
This is fucking... There's law is what...
There's
is,
some law
there's,
here.
There's a deep...
What I really want to talk about is this record, though.
Yes.
I'd like to talk about the record first, and if we have time, we can get into Holy Terror and all that sort
of stuff.
But, so this is like more or less... I mean, they... So in their career, like Integrity is still releasing albums, but these days, I would say on a long enough timeline, you look at Integrity and you go, this is just the creative outlet for DWID Hellion, the vocalist.
Yep.
It's his kind of artistic vision. It wasn't necessarily at the start, but if everything falls under the banner of Integrity, I think you can say Integrity and DWID Hellion are kind of interchangeable terms.
Okay. Yep.
However, early Integrity, like this 90s lineup, the lineup that wrote especially his first three albums, is kind of seen by diehards as the real Integrity because it had these brothers.
The real Integrity.
Yeah. Aaron and Leon Melnick, who were the songwriters, and they are seen as like this duo, guitar and bass respectively, who really defined this Holy Terror sound, I guess.
When you say terror, is it T-E-R-R-O-R?
Yeah, Holy Terror.
Oh, I was thinking T-E-R-R-A. Holy I was like, terror? Oh, like Latin.
Like Terra Nullius?
Yeah, like
Holy Land.
Yeah, like I was like some sort of like Catholic vibe because there's like religious overtones or something like that.
A lot of religious overtones. I guess like the main thing to understand about it, or like what kind of came out of this album and developed and crystallized into a more of a philosophy, is that God and the devil are one.
Yeah.
Like they aren't, those two things aren't opposing philosophies. They're actually part of one philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Called Christianity.
Called
brother.
Well, there's a lyric, I think it's in Abraxas Annihilation, the lamb and goat are forever fused as one. So it's like good and evil are.
And this is like a sincere philosophical movement that the beast band guy.
He's pretty sincere. It is more philosophical than it is pragmatic.
Yeah.
It's very metaphysical.
Yeah, it's not an aesthetic. This person, like, their world philosophy is this.
Yeah, it's kind of more of like an artistic philosophy, I would say, or like a vision for his art.
I'm not sure if I'm using this word correctly, monist, like mono, like one, like two things people think are two things are actually the big one.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, and I think there's extrapolations from that, like, oh, you know, there is no absolute morality or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that comes into his lyrics, but it's more like a questioning of that. It's not like a didactic, like.
It's an epistemological.
It's not nihilism is what I would say. It's definitely not nihilism.
It is, but it is epistemologically revolutionary.
Epistemologically.
Well, as in like, oh fuck, you're making me use my philosophy degree here. Fuck.
Just, no, I just want the definition of epistemology.
It's just like, it's the philosophy of how we know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so for him, he's saying that like, you know, like the way we approach concepts such as good and bad are the illusory. It's kind of like the Buddhist idea of like,
yeah, well,
things yeah. are and we perceive.
This idea that you can't engage. I think integrity, what I get from this album especially, and just sort of like doing brief research on it, is like, don't, like, people are afraid of, from, you know, he was raised religious. He was raised Christian, and that's what drove him to research.
He overcorrected.
Well, he researched, like, what is satanic panic, blah, 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 and, like, just going down these rabbit holes of, like, death cults, Satan cults, and yeah. stuff like that. So he didn't get enamored with that. He didn't want to be a Satanist necessarily, but he became sort of obsessive or very much intrigued with the
special interest
with the aesthetics of it and the philosophies behind it, yeah. and just like engaging with that yeah. darkness. And I think a lot of the lyrics are like, people, you're taught not to engage with badness, yeah. just because you
it's
engage,
critical thinking it's punk as critical thinking yeah. slash critical thinking as punk,
yeah. And my friend was messaging me before, apparently he's a fan of Death in June, who are a Nazi band, and he's like, oh, he's a Nazi by association. And I'm like, I think that matches up with his philosophy. He's just like kind of edgelordish, but also
kind of like a bit Joe Rogan incoherent.
Just because I listen to Screwdriver, if I like a song, doesn't make me a Nazi.
Do you listen to Screwdriver?
No, never. Never. But there was a thing with Def Heaven, you know, black metal band Def Heaven, Stadium. Yeah. They got in trouble because one of the guys, I forget what the band was called, but he's wearing a black metal band t-shirt.
Well,
they were a far right.
I saw Ice Age. Like, I saw Ice Age. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like, there's a whole, like, the flirting of aesthetics versus... But then again, you have to be so online. Like, look, this is the thing, because I've been thinking about, like, my relationship to heavy guitar music over the many years.
I relate to that, so I just love calling it that.
Yeah, it's just call it heavy guitar music, because it's like when normies call anything with screaming in it screamo, and you're screamo, like, yeah. Well, actually, there's scrams, and it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is autism. Like, this is
it
like
is autism.
Actually, if we actually can taxonomize and categorize things very detailed,
yeah,
blah, 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 blah. But yeah, like heavy guitar music, my relationship to it is like, it was always like, guitar go brr, like, mm-hmm. boo, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I remember just like, you know, like
it is a vroom, it's like a
yeah,
ooh,
like, yeah, yeah. That, it's ape, it's unga bunga, like,
yeah, it is, it's like. Yes, it's yeah. It's yeah. Very that's what the mosh pit is. It's like, exactly. I just want to punch myself in the fucking head.
Yeah, like, and then I was with my friend at like this hardcore fest, and like yeah. Extortion were playing, a whole bunch of other bands, like Rubber were playing and all that. And it's just like, oh, this is just adrenaline.
It's
cathartic. It's like yeah. very distilled, and it's just like, also in my head, like,
you know what it is?
Yeah,
it's amateur improv comedy. It's indoor rock climbing. It's fucking paint and sip. That's what it is. That's all it is. It's just a reason not to kill yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Before
like,
tomorrow comes.
I
can't kill myself today. I'm going to go see Extortion tonight.
My best friend said this. He was just like, all art is just cope.
It is. It's absolute cope.
And then you die. And then that's it. And
but
then,
it's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also like, it's like being in comedy and being around like other mediums of like live performance, like other formats of art.
Yeah.
Like the ethos of punk actually is so healthy in comparison to a lot of mindsets that I've encountered. So like a lot of it, because you know, like in Australian punk as well, there's like that double layer of like tall poppy syndrome and stuff. You know, like bands would make a bit of money or something, and then that would be looked down upon. That would be shunned.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
or you got signed, or you sell out, that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also, it's like there's kind of like that very reflexive kind of baked in, like kind of not necessarily crabs in a bucket, but like reframing it in a way of just kind of like maintaining like some sort of purity or integrity. And then like bringing that to comedy is like, you know, it's interesting seeing like people like Carl Kinane, who's just like, oh, like that's the hardcore. He's in the pit, but also he's just loves to talk. And I was like, oh, this is like ADHD. Like,
he's got a circle takes the square tattoo.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's just like like this ethos is really interesting because like I meet so many people who aren't from the punk scene who are more normal, and then like, you know, there's a lot of the whole the very internalized capitalism of like, you know, like becoming a content creator or all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas like punk bands, it's all just like dudes who are like either on. Yeah, yeah, and also like they're all either on or should be on the NDIS. Like I got mates in Newcastle who like legitimately are full-time alcoholics.
Yeah.
But they're also like the closest thing I know to like a pure Buddhist monk. Like they exist entirely out of outside of capitalism.
I get very not so much anymore. Like obviously, you know, like we're both wife guys. We're like we not so much anymore, but like there is something to that. Like I don't necessarily want to be a functioning alcoholic, but like that idea that they're just not thinking about the structures, like the construction.
They don't need to worry about the demands of heteronormativity. Yeah, don't need to worry about the demands of like trying to make money. Like they know they're poor.
Like they're living in a squat and they're poor, but there's something about that that I was maybe a little bit. I think
it can be romantic. It can be
just envious of that level. Like just what you said. They're close to Buddhist monks.
They do five things.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like they do five things and that's their life. And you know what? That's like it's very unalienated. And they have that unalienated relationship to a lot of things, which I think is really cool. I think that's like it's something that like really like a lot of, not to be all live, laugh, love about it, but it's just like, you know, it's important to interrogate. You know, punks very much are like people who love critical thinking, whether or not it's good critical thinking is an entirely separate thing. But, you know, that's kind of like one of the foundational, you know, pretenses or aesthetics of the whole culture. But as well, like the other side of it is also because growing up around a lot of punks as a kid, like as a troubled kid, was like really good because I got to have really good mates who were really good role models, as well as very good anti-role models.
Sure. Yeah.
Like I had two moments in my brain, which are like tattooed in my brain. Like I remember I was going to this one crusty guy at like a squat show, and he was just saying with full sincerity, "Man, why do people talk so bad about heroin when they haven't even done it?" And I'm just like sitting there being like, "Oh, whatever I can do in life to not be like you, I should do that."
Yeah, yeah.
And then I had another moment where I was like, you know, like hanging out with a guy in a squat, and then he poured himself a bowl of cereal, and he went, "Oh, I don't have milk. We also don't have electricity." So then he just poured tap water into his bowl of cereal, and I was just like, "No, like this is not what I want to be like."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's all. In the marketplace of ideas, that I don't know. There's something to just experiencing that and not. I feel like not judging that guy is like, great dude, you go do heroin then, but
this is
a cautionary tale for me.
Exactly. It's just kind of like this whole mindset of just like, oh, these are people who are by definition on the fringes.
Touch the hot plate.
Yeah.
Never touch the hot plate again. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Touch it once. And also as well, it's just like, you know, I think we talked about this like before, but it's just like, in my mind, I have so much genuine admiration for the white anti-racist skinhead, because that is such a commitment to such a maligned aesthetic. And so you have to live your whole life having such strong beliefs and having so many people thinking you have the complete opposite beliefs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, that's dedication to a way of being.
Yeah. The other thing, thing that I've taken from being in the DIY scene and the underground scene and stuff into comedy is just like what you were saying about bands who make it big and stuff like that. That, from a fundamental starting point, never the goal.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
But like, if I'm not enjoying the process of doing comedy, just like if I wasn't enjoying the process of being in a band and creating music, it's not worth it, and it would never be worth it for any amount of money.
And also
it has to be enjoyable, or it has, not even, look, enjoyable is the wrong word. Fun is different to enjoyable, because there's something about an outpouring of emotion. That
also bearable, sustainable as well.
Bearable, sustainable. Yeah, yeah. And it's just like enjoyable. I, because like you can go through something painful, like you could run a marathon and that could be fun, but it's not enjoyable while you're doing it. Do you know what I mean?
It's labor. It's like it's a labor of love. It's a labor of like art and that type of stuff. Like it's ideally, like you want it
if
to be
it's not
as
fulfilling. I should say, if it's not fulfilling on a real level,
it's not feeding your soul. Yeah, exactly.
I'll go work at a bank.
Yeah, like punk and comedy. I think they do overlap in a way as well, in that it's like a very tight feedback loop in terms of the practice of it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you like with bands, like you meet like my friends, like there's a band, they've broken up now, I think, but they're called Obat Batuk.
Yeah. Are they a Newcastle band?
Yeah, Newcastle band. Yeah, yeah. Like they're good mate. They played at my wedding.
Oh, that's cool.
Right. Obat Batuk is also Indonesian for cough syrup.
Okay. That's
and
funny.
Like
lean?
Yeah. Like, I remember I had this one moment where, like, I was hanging out with my mates in Newcastle. We were having a sheddy, which is when you hang out in a shed. And then, like...
You're kidding.
Yeah. And then, like, they were all just, like, hanging around. And they just had, like, you know, like a a brown glass bottle in a brown paper bag.
Yeah.
And they just kind of, like, just passing that around, sharing. And I was like, oh, this is really tame. They're just sharing one long neck. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then, like, we're just hanging out. And then the paper bag just fell off the bottle. And it wasn't a long neck of beer. It was just cough syrup. And I was like, oh.
Oh, I see.
Like, another time as well.
Louise over here.
Yeah. And then, like, another time as well, like, I got to Newcastle to hang out with my mates. And then, like, you know, because, you know, like, they didn't have, they keep the door unlocked. They say, oh, yeah, when you come in, we just walk upstairs.
Yes, yeah.
And so, like, you know, I got to their house. Walked upstairs and they were just playing like SNES, like playing yeah. like Bomberman on SNES. Okay.
Yeah.
And no one was saying anything, so I didn't say anything. I was just watching them. And I just joined in the room, sat down, just watching them play Bomberman for like 40 minutes. And then they just kind of stopped playing. And then my mate turned to me and just said, by the way, Kevin, we're all on acid. This is who I was hanging out with when I was a kid.
Well, I was more in... Well, I guess I wasn't in the straight edge scene, but I was straight edge. I guess Brisbane was very different.
Though. I was straight edge for the whole time. I still am. Like, that's the whole thing as well.
Are you straight edge? You're not just sober? Like, do you count yourself as sort
of okay, so culture? I've got... For people who are listening at home, I've had a foot-long rasta for literally my entire life, never been cut. And it makes me look like, you know, like an Eshe or something like that.
Yeah.
But I've never done recreational drugs.
Okay.
I've drunk alcohol, I think, like twice, and both times were by accident. And it was like a mouthful at the time.
Yeah.
I've eaten the Rumble once.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I necessarily was straight edge because I didn't listen to the bands, but I was just like, sure. Oh, I, you know, I just really... like to honor what Healthy Harold told me.
Yeah. The straight edge icon.
Yeah. And also just because as well, like growing up as well, like I was like, oh, I know I have like massive predispositions towards addiction.
Yeah.
And I am a video game game addict. Yeah. And like it's genuinely like quite difficult and life ruining in the past.
It's tough, man. Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't smoke weed, I don't drink alcohol, I don't do recreational. I do like speed, but that's just because I'm prescribed it now.
Yeah.
And it just makes me do emails.
Like every Yeah, I love those class A drugs that make you
just
do admin.
Yeah. It's like, I know so many cunts who are like, oh yeah, I did like MDMA or coke at a party and all that happened was I just kind of like, my my head got quiet. There weren't like three different voices all talking at the same time in my head. I'm just like, yeah.
That's okay. Okay, nice. I think that's like a good ground. Like, yeah, it's great to have someone come on who grew up in this culture, even if you're not familiar with this band. I feel like I have to do a bit of a lightning round because like I'm so fascinated.
Hey, we've just been old heads reminiscing.
No, it's great though because like I think it gives people who if there's anyone listening who wasn't already into hardcore, I think you coming onto it as a counterpoint to me to explain your like it's a good counterbalance to me just trying to be like no, but to comedians who are just like. Sounds like you wasted your youth, man. like I like that. But like for this record specifically, Humanity is the Devil.
It fucking rips.
It
just riffs. Like
it do be ripping.
Like I had no, prior to coming to this, I purposely wrote no notes about the musical analysis. I was like, oh, these D beats remind me of this. But I was like, no, this fucking rips. I don't like to intellectualize.
Yeah.
It
is a weird mix of like it's a little bit crusty. Like they're not crusty dudes. They're not necessarily like, I mean, everyone was DIY kind of.
Yeah.
mid-90s but it was almost like a reaction similar to the way Earth Crisis was like all these major labels were sweeping in after Nirvana and hardcore bands were like sick of it all quicksand they were getting lifted out of the underground and then I think that forced the bands that stayed in the underground to go even more extreme
These
guys are like it's this weird mix of like you said D beat crust like they love Jism from Japan who
I love Jism
Discharge who are a famous crust punk band like just so fucking good
Dark
like Slayer, Motorhead, Metallica, like there's all this stuff going on. But then this youth crew kind of legacy still kind of shines through. Like Hollow, the second track.
Yeah.
To me, if someone was like, what is hardcore song?
You what just does, put that.
What does a hardcore, like just that bass intro. That
is textbook, like good tempo, yeah. that
but
type of thing.
It's not. It's very different to 80s hardcore. It is yeah. different. It is darker. It is more evil.
There's more just sub bass in the frequency of it all. It doesn't sound like Minor Threat. It doesn't sound like that.
Yeah.
And also, like this album as well, it has like what I would think of as like kind of like cheesy but still fucking sick guitar solos.
Honest to God, there's genuinely
moments like that. Yeah. And I'm like, this fucking rips. This is awesome.
Yeah, I had a quote about that. Like basically, like talking about how this is Aaron Melnick writing these songs, and it was like this appreciation for like blues guitar, and they were saying like how you could lift some of those solos, like leave the heaviness, leave everything else there, like lift those solos or that clean picking that comes in and out throughout the songs and layer it over like a Rolling Stones song or like Cream song, and it would be at home.
Yeah.
Like, and I think there's this melancholy that shines through in the music that just makes it even more evil.
It's spooky. And also half that album is a fucking ASMR track. It's a spooky ASMR. It's like the human. It's great. It's like it's cool. It's just like the whole album take. Yeah. We've spent the amount of time we spent talking, we could have listened to the album four times.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hardcore go brr. Like
So yeah, there's reviews, like this is just a quote from one review. It's an absolute masterpiece and remains as one of the most unique, bizarre recordings in punk rock ever. And I do think that's true, but everything has to be viewed through the lens of now. So like I don't want to be revisionist. I think it's like, it to me, it when I heard it, it didn't sound bizarre and unique because it was so influential.
Well, also when you say bizarre and unique, do you just mean the fact that the latter half of the album is a dark meditation track?
Yeah, yeah. But also like, on Vocal Test, the first track, which is one of my favorite hardcore songs ever, even that, they're laying his, like he's, no lyrics to that.
It's a vocal test. It's literally a vocal test, yeah.
But they're layering his vocal tracks. He isn't double tracking. He's like triple or quadruple tracking.
Mm.
So they're just experimenting with sound and like post-production and stuff like that all the way through this record. Even on the, blitzes, even on the absolute rippers, there's still these weird like, just effects that he's putting on his vocals and noise experimentation. And I think that's what, like this other quote I have is humanity is the devil is where this band flipped the table. So Systems Overload was like permission. And then this album is like, all right, well, we're going full psycho on this, you know? But yeah, like still in this quote, he's like, there's still a curious embrace of the classic punk wedged within the freakier cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you said about the corny guitar solos because in my head
this is all push-up music. This is music I put on and I do push-ups.
But I think my favorite song is Jagged Visions of My True Destiny, which is the second longest song on the album at 4 minutes.
Oh fuck, that's 25 grindcore songs.
As opposed to the final track, which is 11 minutes. But it is deceptively easy to make fun of this guy's lyrics. Like you look at a song title like,
oh, I don't know what any of the lyrics are, jagged, by the way. I didn't read any of them.
Well, even just the song title, I guess.
Yeah.
Like Jagged Visions of My True Destiny. Like, fucking what are you talking about, dude? And then you put it on and the music and the blues solo, and you're like, oh, the Jagged Visions of My True Destiny is rough.
I get it now.
It's just like, it's so fully realized. I think the music and his like evil aesthetic, philosophy.
Timeline, where does this album sit in relation to Dystopia?
I actually don't know. I never got into Dystopia.
Oh, okay.
I never got into him.
Okay.
The Graffiti Band.
I think so. Like, it's also because there's so many bands I know of as just names.
Yeah.
And like every now and then, like a friend will show me a thing and I'm like, oh, cool. And then it's just like, I had a very, very like laissez-faire approach to listening to punk music punk.
Some of it feels like homework.
Sometimes it does.
Especially when you have older friends being like, oh, you've got to look.
I watched The Big Lebowski last week for the first time. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen The Big Lebowski?
It just takes me a while to get around to shit. In my own time.
Yeah. And this is from Dwid. He's like, I wanted to make a concept album in the sense of how Iron Maiden or King Diamond would create. And this is a guy from the hardcore scene talking about fucking King Diamond. Like, yeah. I think it's awesome. So in the original pressing, copies of Humanity came with a small booklet that would help convey the concept and at the same time have the look and feel of a cult pamphlet that you might be handed on a dingy street corner in the late 1960s.
He's really conceptualized this.
Yeah, it is a fiction. Like, he's living like a theater with this
band. It's like a musical.
It's an art project.
There's a narrative.
It is an art project. There's
narrative and meta-narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's still like... I do feel like it's very authentic. Like, the music itself. Like, if you like take away the concepts, take away the philosophy, if you just look at it as, what is this song? Still, it rips. It just fucking rips. Yeah.
It also as well, like, I mean, I was at the hardcore show and I was like, you know what? To an outsider, all these bands do sound the same. And you know what? I fucking love it.
It's so good. There is... Well, that's what I think. I can't remember what episode it was, but this came up before. Like, the barrier to entry on this music... I think it was on the Sick of It All episode, because they're such a big band that is still pretty purely hardcore.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love that... That the attraction is that there is a barrier to entry. Like, you don't have to gatekeep hardcore because the sound itself gatekeeps for you.
Yeah.
And the more extreme these bands go, the harder it is for posers to get into it. Like,
I remember
you get exposed pretty quickly.
I remember in high school, like, showing someone in my English class like a Weaker Than song, and then she was like, "There's too much distortion," I was like, "Oh man, Weaker Thans."
I think as important as it is to be a part of a subculture while you're young, it's equally as important to be a part of the mainstream when you're old, because like, I have the same thing. I'll show someone a fucking Parquet Court song and they'll be like, "Oh, this is a bit much for me."
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they were on Laneway Festival. What but are
also,
you talking about?
But also, like, it's really fun as well, like, what's happened. And I know this discourse itself is like old, but like that overlap of just hip hop aesthetics and like how like metalcore dudes just, like, you know, and also, you know, like fucking Denzel Curry, like, just it's just every like testosterone young man music is converging into like Limp Bizkit revival of everyone. Like, everyone hits their 30s and realize everything they loved when they were 12 actually is fucking awesome. Action movies, big boobs and rap metal are fucking sick, actually. Like, you know, Return was a V instead of a U. You know. I'm a fascist but for nu metal.
I don't know, there's a watering down of culture as it gets more and more mainstream. And that's why I think a band like Integrity, even if it is just Dwid kind of having this vanity project that kind of maybe at this point negates the efforts of people like the Melniks in the 90s.
Well, also, it's fucking outside.
It's pure?
Yeah, it's outside of music.
It's purity.
It's outside of music and not in the sense of like you're necessarily like a hardcore schizophrenic, like Wesley Willis type of music, but it's more just like this is for like, oh, you're like a really angry, you're an intense kid and this is your outlet and this is the community that comes out from that.
And I think it's a true expression of who he is. You know, you could call him the Morrissey of hardcore in a way, because he just like took this band. Like, Morrissey obviously had a solo career.
Sorry, the Morrissey of hardcore is just sinking in. I'm like, oh, so he's vegan and racist.
I don't think he's vegan. Some questionable imagery maybe.
Take me on the out tonight.
But he's just like this iconoclast. He's like a real figurehead. He's a little bit mysterious, a little bit like poking the bear, tongue in cheek sort of stuff. Yeah. The title track. I wanted to talk about the title track, the noise experimental spoken word.
Towards the end.
The final song.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't make out shit. I just was playing video games.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's a spoken word. I'm just read what it is. Spoken word performance by a man named Frank Araka. Araka?
Raka Raka Ali.
A-R-A-C-A. But he is the father of their late drummer, Dave Araka, who died suddenly of a brain aneurysm in 1991. So he was their original drummer when they formed in 88. So the dark spoken word message about God being fed up with humans' lust for physical pleasure rather than eternal salvation. So they got this grieving father. Fuck. Well, probably not. I mean, it was like 5 years later at this point. Yeah. But yeah, they got this guy and it's like, you know, your son died. He was in our band. We miss him. You miss him.
Mm.
Talk about Satan for 11 minutes.
But also, I really do think it's cool how like the concept of Satan isn't like a bad guy that you have to defeat like in a movie.
Yeah.
Because like you meet people who have like a very passing or naive concept of like theological philosophy, and they're like, oh, the devil's a bad guy.
Devil, bad guy. He wear black.
Whereas actually, no, devil is actually the worst parts of you. The devil is inside all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In this interview, where he sort of is talking about like he's talking about his philosophy and all that sort of stuff, which is what I extrapolated what I said. It's an interview on No Echo, mm-hmm. but he talks about Dadaism. He talks about fucking Boyd Rice, William H. Burroughs, Tristan Zara, all these like kind of extreme artists, I guess.
This guy would have fucking loved doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I don't think he's very funny though. I think he's pretty serious.
What I've said and what you just said are entirely compatible with each other.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I do want to put this quote on. I know we're not running out of time. I don't want to rush it, but I do want to get this in. This is a quote from Dwid. And this is in 2020. So album came out in 96. Dwid is still making records. This, I just want to be very clear, this is a recent interview.
Yeah.
But he says, I have always felt aggressively at odds with the concept of being categorized within a specific genre or subgenre. That uncomfortable feeling has led me to push the boundaries even further. Their imposed confinement only acts as a tool to push you to pursue new heights of experimentation and discard the imaginary boundaries.
This sounds like a non-binary person. Like, but no, but sincerely, like, you know what I mean? Like, categorization versus breaking a categorization.
So
that's the line that my head
I think that is his legacy because, like, what? Okay. So in terms of what this means for all the bands that came after him, like, they were so influential. But, like, what this record, Humanity Is Dead, what it says to me is there was this economy of ideas. The longer hardcore punk existed, the longer it had to communicate with other styles of music.
The Shape of Things to Come.
The Shape of...
The Shape of Punk to Come.
The Shape of Punk to Come by Refuse. No. No. I think it has very little in common with that record. But like, you know, the guys in Sepultura love punk rock.
Yes.
The guys in Slayer love punk rock.
Yes.
So then obviously it goes back around the cycle and then the guys in Integrity love Slayer. The guys in Integrity love Metallica.
Yeah.
And so it's just this mixing of genres and like it's a weird thing because like Dwid isn't singing about literal demons and stuff like that, but he it's weirdly intelligent these concepts that he's writing songs about.
Yeah.
It's like weirdly heady for a hardcore band.
But also, I never associate like hardcore with unintelligent because
I don't mean to say that.
But it's like, you know, like, when you sit down and you read hardcore lyrics out, they're just fucked poems.
They are.
And they're very interesting.
They're vague book statuses.
They can be vague book statuses, but they can also be like just explicitly like, I'm a vegan and that type of stuff. And
well,
it's just,
he's not singing about unity and the scene. He's singing about how God and the devil are actually the same thing and there's four figureheads and Abraxas is coming and like...
It's very... It's very Tool.
It's a little bit Tool, dude. It is.
And you know what? Okay, I want to go on record as saying this. I fucking love Tool, man. Tool fucking. Good. It's
exactly what you said before. That stuff we liked when we were teenagers that we kind of denounced.
Yeah.
Oh, it's actually good.
It's like I remember just making like a Galaxy Brain meme. And it's just like it was just like 8 or 9 brains long, and it was just like liking Tool. Liking Tool ironically, liking Tool, liking Tool ironically, liking Tool ironically.
I love that.
Yeah, it's just like sick riffs. It's just like...
Yeah, they're great. I love the bass player in Tool. Such a good bass player.
And like, I remember like being, you know, like at Blackwire watching shows, having a great time and just thinking like, you know, being around people who are like fucking 30 years older than me and stuff and being like, oh, I can see how people can just give their whole life to this.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that's beautiful and that's pure and that's like, it's nice to be part of like, and this is the thing that I try to do is my approach to kind of being in the comedy scene, but I always like to view things as kind of like larger than myself and like, I'm part of a tapestry. There are people who came before me and there'll be people who come after me as well.
Mm.
And it's just like trying to foster like this community mindedness of it all. Like it's very communist. It's very idealistic.
No, I like it.
But yeah, it's just like,
I feel the same way.
Yeah. And so it's just really,
obviously there's a lot of, and I think you could say this for the hardcore scene as well. Like, but there is a lot of shit talking. There is a lot of like one-upness. There is a lot of kind of, I guess, double talk, double speak. Like,
yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
And if you can just be like, all right, that's fine, but I'm going to do me.
Yeah.
And I want this to be good. And I'm just going to do whatever I can for this to be good.
Now who's vague book posting?
Me.
Yeah. It's just
no names.
Yeah. It's all just vibes, man. It's all just vibes. And it's like a fun vibe. It's cool. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, like, I remember, you know, like, you know when you have a conversation with someone about, like, heavy guitar music, and they don't like it, they don't get it, they think it's scary or something like that. But then, you know, you've had those conversations where you manage to convince them. You're like, hey, if you just listen to it as just energy, it's like, look, all right, like, I've worked in mental health.
Mm-hmm.
In a specific organization. I don't want to say.
Yeah, stand-up comedy.
Yeah. But it's just like, one of the things that we were trained, well, one of the things that I already knew, but one of the things that kind of got reinforced in training is like, when you are interacting with someone and they're really angry, they're actually allowed to be, that's totally fine. Anger is just energy.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that's what this whole area of music is and stuff. Yeah. It's all just fucking getting hyped. Yeah. And it's all just kind of like people have like fucking, you know, backbreaking jobs and they go to the show and see all their mates and that type of stuff. It's fun. It's sick. Yeah. It's, yeah.
What something you said about like, what I like about integrity that relates to what you just said is like, you show people these bands and like, oh, it's too scary. What I appreciate about integrity is that they are scary. They're doing everything in their power to be scary and actually be the thing that the outside mainstream world kind of sees.
They're being spooky scary rather than like neo-Nazi biker scary.
No.
That's a different type of scary.
They're being demon scary. Like they're being Church of Satan scary.
Yeah.
They're genuinely trying to push the mainstream away from them.
Yeah.
And I like that because even though it's like, it's silly and it's spooky and everything like that. But like, yeah, you show, like what you said before, you showed that person weaker thans and they're like, oh, a bit much.
The cozy Canadian sweater of punk.
Integrity could have been, for all I knew, showing you integrity, they could have, by all rights, been too much for you. Because I don't know like all the music that you're into, basically. Yeah, I wasn't necessarily expecting you to love this band.
No, they rip. They fucking they're great. Yeah.
I love what they did for hardcore in terms of atmosphere.
Mm.
So Dweed, he's like he's an experimental noise musician as well as a vocalist in a hardcore band. But like that's so meaningful because all the bands that I really loved when I was actually finding new bands and listening like in a contemporary sense, like mainly in the mid-2000s and stuff, there were all the bands that used atmosphere and wrote songs. And there was a bit of that came before Integrity, of course. Like on the No Spiritual Surrender EP by Inside Out, which is Zach De La Rocha's first band.
Oh, okay.
They use a lot of guitar feedback and kind of delay pedals and reverb. It is still very live. And then they just go straight into a youth crew song.
Oh, okay.
But these guys made an effort to give these songs space so as to better convey the message of scary.
Yeah.
Music scary. And then you listen to bands that came like years after like Botch and there's just like, there's so much space, there's so much atmosphere, there's an interplay between melody and aggression and it's like, I'm not saying they were directly influenced by Integrity. Botch and Integrity sound nothing alike. What I'm saying is bands like this and records like this really laid a groundwork for the whole genre to play within. I guess.
Yeah. Because also as well, like I've seen so many bands that make the conscious choice to like in between songs, the guitar is just feeding back. There was never silence on stage.
Yeah.
There's always some sort of wall. There's always some sort of sensation. There's always some sort of phenomenon. So there's always a wire in your brain firing as the viewer or as the consumer of that.
I love that.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of like trying to explain like what punk music was to people who weren't around it was way easier than explaining what noise was as well. Yeah. But then also explaining how noise is the extension of punk music.
It's like, how punk can you be? Oh, just abrasive.
Yeah, sound like sound
sheet
concrete.
Metal with contact mics.
Yeah, yeah. Justice yelled them like fucking up pieces of glass with contact mics. It's just like it's just like this is what I say to my mates now. It's just like all of this shit, like heavy guitar music, noise, harsh noise, or whatever.
Yeah,
all of it is just big stim.
Big stim.
Big stim. Big stim.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the cunts who make this music, who love this music, they could not focus in this class.
No, absolutely not.
And this is how kind of like we, you know, are alive and spend our time on Earth making just cool shit in this way.
The other thing, I just thought of this, like we'll wrap up in a second, but like the other part of it is like, like the noise and like the experimentation and the permission to do weird shit. That I think that's really important. But also like this more and more, like with every passing year, you kind of see like the musicians allowed to be nerds, allowed to be guitar nerds, like blues. Like it's not just because like you listen to fucking Minor Threat or Black Flag and you're like punk.
Yeah.
But these guys are like blues, Black Sabbath. Fucking
old school riffs.
Old school riffs. They're just
dad
allowed.
Rock
they're just
elements.
Allowed to be nerds. And and
well, all musicians are nerds as well. It's like the whole thing as well. It's just like when people realize that bodybuilders are just muscle nerds and that everything is nerds.
Yeah.
Everything is just big stim.
Yeah.
Everything is just like special interest. All interest is special interest.
But I don't necessarily think like technical ability was derided in early hardcore, but it definitely wasn't explored as much as it is on an album like this.
That's true.
You know, like this is far from rudimentary hardcore punk, but it still maintains.
Yeah,
it's not
one of those albums where it's awesome despite the band members barely knowing how to play their instruments.
These guys know how to fucking play.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's also as well. So it's like my wife was telling me that, like, you know, like she studied Baroque and classical and historical genres of
European
music.
And she used all
of
that ingenuity and hard work to play the recorder.
No. But genuinely, if you listen to like modern recorder music, it is harsh noise. It is like crazy, like it's just like people.
Jamie, bring it up.
People who play the recorder are very specific people. They're very, very specific people, and they make some weird shit.
Yeah, cool.
And so, like a lot of modern recorder music is just kind of like neoclassical, which I don't much care for. But then
it's
there's
like Ryuichi, what's his name?
Japan's got a big recorder, modern recorder scene.
Yeah, right.
But like the there's a lot of recorder pieces. Like there's a piece called Elsa Artem, and I saw my wife perform. I listened to her rehearse it for 2 years before her recital. But it's just like the recorder player plays two recorders at once and sings, and during all this swaps out recorders for other size recorders as well. And it's like it musically, if you just sat down and listen to a recording of it, it sounds fucking dog shit. But to actually watch it and experience it in the moment is actually crazy.
It's a performance, yeah.
And this is the thing with recorder music, and like kind of like the learnings and the musical philosophy that my wife has kind of talked to me about. It's just like there's such music that's meant to be purely live and is not meant to be recorded.
Yeah.
Which is just like pieces. Cool. Yeah, like when you watch this piece, like watching this person do this crazy fucking double recorder piece, and it's like it's shrieking, and there's like it's really impressive to watch as well.
Yeah.
And so in my head, there's still just it's all like the universal underlying, like the thing that ties fucking hardcore, fucking nu metal, all this shit, noise. It's all just wires in my brain firing.
Yeah.
And like the sensibilities and like artistic approaches of like, you know, fucking weird experimental music is kind of, I don't know, everything everywhere all at once, you know, like everything's the same, like everything kind of has the same thing to it all.
Yeah.
Like in my mind, this is kind of a thing that I've been getting around to thinking lately, but I feel like all art, not all art is the same, but all art is the same. So like,
I was thinking, that's so weird that you bring this up. I was thinking the exact same thing earlier.
Yeah. Big stim. It's all big stim.
No, but I was thinking about that Kanye, my role model, the spiritual king Kanye, who I base my entire... No, but like that quote where he's like, everything is the same.
Yeah, it's like, for example, like if I...
That sounds fucking stupid, but you get to a certain age, you're like, yeah, everything is the same.
If I told you that I went and saw like a musical or a ballet show or a band performance or a solo comedy hour.
Yeah.
And I came away from it and you asked me how it was. And I said, oh, conceptually it was ambitious. It was a bit busy, but I don't know if they landed all the elements at the end. You'd know what I was saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not it was like a fucking ballet piece or like a stand up hour or a fucking weird band play. Yeah. If it's Death Grips at the end more, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like, it's just like, it's all just. I don't know, like a fucking...
It's all great.
Yeah, it's all awesome. It's all just wires in brain firing.
One of the most punk things I ever saw, I was... Partly because I got into it because of the band, but there's a... You know, do you know Stravinsky's Rites of Spring?
No.
It's a ballet.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I guess like... Yeah. Anyway, I saw at Brisbane Festival, fucking must be like early 2010s.
Yeah.
I went and saw a new production of Rites of Spring by Stravinsky, and it was so fucking good. So when he debuted this piece, when he debuted Rites of Spring, there were riots in Paris.
Far out. Do you know who else was in Paris?
Tell me. Tell me who. Speaking of Kanye.
Yeah, yes.
Are you allowed to say? You got to put rice in front of it. Hey, that's a good place to end it.
Fucking
welcome to my racist podcast. Yeah. No, that was amazing, man. That was such good stories. Thank you so much for like sharing all that. It was awesome. All right.
I hope this podcast is like listenable. We do a lot of jumping around.
Yeah, a little bit. I had rat brain today, but like, I don't know. I think people like it. I think people like to hear your experience.
And again, like I said before, the Venn diagram.
We eventually got to the record as well. Yeah. So we did everything we were supposed to do. It's great.
The Venn diagram of people who are this punk aware and this comedy aware is just me and you.
Maybe, but like, I genuinely think, I listen to other podcasts with people who have had completely different experiences to me. I still get something out of it.
That's true. Yeah,
I just listen to Moshe Katri. This is actually a hot tip. A little known podcast called The Joe Rogan Experience. No, but there was a recent episode, Joey, my friend Joe, he had Moshe Katri on. And Moshe Katri, he's a comedian. He's had a fucking crazy life.
Let's save this for after the record because I don't want your audience members to listen to a podcast where you talk about another podcast.
I'm just saying, if you feel like listening to 3 hours, it is a good episode. If you've got a long drive, put on the Moshe Katri, Joe Rogan. Anyway, social media.
Instagram at Kevin Jin Comedy.
Yeah.
That's the only one I use now.
Yeah,
at this
me
point.
Too. Yeah. Ryan.d.sim. Message me. We got Dead Ramones as well on Instagram. DM me or send me an email to deadramonespodcast@gmail.com. Complaints department is open. If we did say 1996, we chose integrity, humanity as a devil. If you're like, dude, fuck you. How could you not do this other really important album from 1996? Email me. Because I do want to start a Patreon. Give me content to cover. I'll do it. Ryan.d.sim, Dead Ramones. I'm on Instagram. Come down to Rat Club on a Monday night in King Street, Erskineville.
Sydney, Australia.
Mosh Pit Bar. Every single Monday night, Rat Club is the most insane fucking comedy show in the city. And it is ruining my life.
It's a good room.
It is really fun. It's getting crazier and crazier. It's so psycho. It's
I really enjoy watching you have mental breakdowns on stage. It's great. It's fun.
It's great. I found a way. Everyone's like, I love this character. I'm like, no, I've just found a way to excuse how stressed out this makes me. And I just am able to express that now.
Yes.
I think that's it, man. Yeah, again, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was fun to just be old heads.
I fucking realized this might not come out till after your fucking Adelaide run. So we plugged it.
I'm not doing Adelaide.
Melbourne. Oh, it should be out before Melbourne.
Oh, easy.
Yeah. Melbourne's April, May, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be good. Okay, good. Rat brain, like I said, let's go do some comedy, baby.
Boop.